I'm honestly not sure if Florida is a team that even feels pressure, to be honest with you. Because, you know, they were down 2-0 against Toronto. They blew a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup final last year. They end up pulling out the series anyway. Like,
welcome back to another episode from Checking From Behind. I'm your host, Zach, as always joined by my co-host, Preston, to my right. Ladies and gents, the Stanley Cup Finals are underway. We already saw games 1 and 2 happen. We're recording here on Sunday morning, a few hours before this episode releases. The finals, man, they have been absolute cinemite. Do you know that meme of, like, the old guy with his hands up and it says absolute cinema?
Oh, yeah, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, that's this series right now.
I mean, I'm kind of glad this series has lived up to the hype. The conference finals were extremely underwhelming, not really competitive. And then we get the Stanley Cup final where you can disagree with me if you don't think I'm right, but the clear-cut two best teams in the playoffs playing at their absolute best, equally matched teams just going, you know, at each other's throats.
Yeah, and I was originally skeptical about it being a rematch because I like new teams and I like the parity. I was rooting for Toronto in the playoffs because I was like, it'd be so sick just to see them in the finals finally. Obviously, they don't get past the Panthers. But then game one happens. I'm like, all right, let's see what you guys got. And it was off to a bang right away. Game one was phenomenal. And then it's like, this is the best start of a finals that we can remember. Game two is even better.
Yep.
And right now we're on track for a triple overtime.
I don't know about that. I feel like eventually we'll have a game that doesn't go to overtime, but that's just a testament to how equally matched these teams are, which is one you want to see in a series like this, where it should be the best team against the other best team from each conference. Like I said, just going at each other's throats, and you know, every time they make a mistake, you make them pay for it. You know, Sergei Bobrovsky's been uncharacteristically not great. He's let in a lot of goals this series so far. I mean, Stuart Skinner, you never know what you're going to get from him. But, you know, the Oilers have been able to put in the net on the guy who's arguably been the second best goaltender in the playoffs so far behind Frederik Andersen.
And if we go over to game one, the Oilers were down 3-1 at some point in that game. And it looked like the Panthers, they were the much better team. The Oilers were able to generate some pressure, but Bobrovsky was making saves. The defense for the Panthers outside of Ekblad and Forsling, who got caved in game one, it was like, compared to everybody else on the Panthers team, there was a chart that I saw. I don't know if you know what chart I'm talking about, but it's like the bar is like going left and then going right. But I don't know.
The impact, game impact, yeah. Or some bullshit like that.
Ekblad, yeah. And Forsling were the last two at the bottom all the way to the far left.
I don't think Barkov had a great game one either.
No, he didn't.
He had some uncharacteristic turnovers, especially late in the game. He was getting matched up with the McDavid line, which we all expected. And McDavid looked like he was kind of having his way.
McDavid had his way for both games so far. He has looked phenomenal.
I mean, that assist he had in game two, I don't know who. No one can defend that.
That was disgusting.
If you have a guy with three guys surrounding him and he just pulls that move off him. I could have scored that goal. Your eyesight scored. He was just wide open in the slot. Bobrovsky had no chance.
No, wide open cage. Yeah. Home. He's going to be in that home 10 times out of 10.
Because everyone's probably just watching McDavid and we're like, what the fuck?
Did you see Bouchard's reaction to that goal?
No.
His fucking hands were like this on his head after.
He's the best player in the world for a reason. There's not really any other guys in the league that could do that right now.
Speaking of Bouchard has been phenomenal, yeah, in the finals. I believe he is the first defenseman of all time to have multiple three-point periods in a Stanley Cup final, and it's only been two games.
Yeah. I mean, Bouchard's been excellent for them all playoffs. He really knows how to turn it out in the playoffs. He had a bad turnover late in, I think it was game, I don't remember which game it was, but he had a bad turnover late, which almost led to the Panthers stealing I think it was game one when it was tied late. He had a really, really bad turnover.
That's the stuff that you get with Bouchard. Sometimes,
yeah,
you make this
Skinner bailed him out, though. Yeah.
I mean, it's nice that Skinner locks it in for the playoffs, too. He can bail out his team.
Yeah.
And overall, the series is tied 1-1. And we go over to game one. The Panthers are 31-1 when leading after two periods and three postseasons under Maurice. That only lost,
that's
of course,
a wild,
in game
the 31
one.
Wins. That's wild in 3 years in the playoffs.
We've talked about this the entire playoffs. When they get a lead in the playoffs, they hold on to it. They win hockey games. Whether it's 1-0 or 4-3, they win them. And they just...
Well, I expect most teams in the NHL, if you're leading after two in a playoff game, to hold on and win that game. But know, just the stats, like, that was their first loss under Paul Maurice, and they were leading by two after two periods. It's kind of wild.
That is kind of,
I mean,
crazy.
Yeah, it's just a testament to how well they play defensively and how locked in they stay.
Sam Bennett had two goals in game one. He has been arguably the Panthers' Conn Smythe winner if they win the Cup. He has been phenomenal. Him and Marchand have been some of the two best players for this team. Nate Schmidt has been phenomenal for the Panthers so far. He looks confident. He looks, whenever he's with the puck, he just makes a play, and he's just playing hockey out there. He has looked phenomenal. So overall, I think that this series is going to end up going seven games.
I think there's a really good chance it goes the distance. I think I'd be shocked if a team won a game, honestly, by two goals.
Wait, say it again?
I'd be shocked if a team won a game by two or more goals.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be that tight going the way. We'll see how it is when it goes back to Florida, because, you know, you mentioned about Sam Bennett. He's a completely different player on the road than he is at home, which is really weird. Mm-hmm. He's better on the road than he is at home. I think he just set a new NHL record for the most goals on the road in a playoff.
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting double-sided thing from him. But you just look at the Panthers team as a whole, and they're getting contributions from everybody in the lineup. You know, Nate Schmitz, who's like a second, third pair defenseman. Their third line has arguably been the best line of the playoffs with Marchand and Lustarainen and those guys. And then you have, you know, Barkov, who's a sleeping giant, who I think will turn it around. I think he was better in game two. But, you know, uncharacteristically high-scoring games from games one and two so far. I thought they were going to be tighter games. I didn't think they were going to be, like, super high-scoring like they have been.
Complete fireworks.
I mean, game two, I think, was 3-2 after the first period, which is five goals in a period is wild.
And then after that, the second period was high event, but there wasn't a ton of goals. And then the third period, with about 20 seconds left, Corey Perry ties the game at 4. And then, of course, we all know game goes in double overtime. Both teams have multiple chances.
That was a great overtime. Both teams had plenty of chances to win. Honestly, I thought the Oilers, for the most part, were the better team in the overtime. It's just the Panthers had a lucky break. Marchand buried it.
Yeah, Marchand had two goals in that game.
He was the MVP of that game.
Yeah, he had a shorthanded goal to go up 4-3.
Yep.
And then you have the overtime goal, was it a breakaway?
Yes.
Yes, and he buried it.
Yep.
So there's nothing you can really do about that if you're Skinner. Of course, you know, you want to make the save there. But at the same time, I mean, it's a breakaway, Marchand, and the series.
And double overtime, I mean, I think both teams had over 40 shots at net. So, I mean, I'm not saying he was tired. I'm not giving him an excuse, but statistically, it's a lot harder for a goalie to make a save on a breakaway than any other moment, because the player's always going to have an advantage in that kind of situation.
Yeah, and these guys can pick a corner. They can hit a spot, whatever spot they want. And he ended up finding the back of the net. And it was a huge win for the Panthers, too, because I know going back to Sunrise is a huge deal for the Panthers. You'd steal one on the road against the Edmonton Oilers. And now, if you went down 2-0 going back to Sunrise, Game 3 would be definitely a must-win. Game 4 would be a must-win. Now all the pressure's on you guys. The Oilers, if they drop a game, it's not a big deal. Now, whoever drops the game in Game 3, all the pressure's going to be on them. Because statistically, from being up 2-1 and down 1-2 is a massive...
I'm honestly not sure if Florida is a team that even feels pressure, to be honest with you. Because, you know, they were down 2-0 against Toronto. They blew a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Final last year. They end up pulling out the series anyway. Like, this to me seems like a team, like, they don't really care what the situation is. They're just going to play their hardest.
They just play hockey.
I honestly don't think pressure really affects them too much. I don't think they think about it. I think Maurice does a huge, good job keeping them grounded in the moment and, you know, living from game to game. You know, because, you know, like the coach has said, he does not believe in game to game momentum. You know, and I kind of agree with him at a point where, you know, you have 2 days off for travel. You're traveling from Edmonton to Florida. It's hard to carry over momentum when you're off the ice for that many days and you're having that long of a trip.
It's not like you play a game 36 hours later. Like,
yeah, if it was like every other day, yeah, I could definitely see being able to carry something over that. But, yeah, with a few days rest, I don't see momentum being carried over. I think both teams are going to be fresh. Florida should have the advantage. They get to sleep in their own beds. They're home, so they should have the advantage. I mean, whenever you can steal, you're the road team in game one or two, and you can steal a game, you pretty much have home ice advantage now for the rest of the playoffs.
That's massive. Now it turns into the best 3 out of 5.
Yep.
And all you have to do, and the Panthers do a great job at this, and the Oilers do as well, but just not even just thinking about game to game, thinking about shift to shift. Can our line go out there and just be productive? It doesn't have to be put the puck in the back of the net. Of course, you want to end up doing that, but it's like, can defensively, if there's a defensive zone draw, can we win the draw? Or if we lose the draw, can we hold them to the outside, play fundamentally good hockey? Can we make clean passes? It's all about the little things from shift to shift that can help you build momentum, because even if you don't put the puck in the back of the net, being able to make clean passes, being able to make smart plays, that instills little confidence steps in these players, and then eventually they'll find it in the back of the net. And I think that's huge for both teams. And the Panthers do a really good job. Maurice does a really good job of making sure that these guys, they play hockey. They don't go out there. They don't overthink. They don't overplay anything. They don't get too antsy. We talk about players sometimes where you can tell they get a little bit antsy, especially when, whether it's a final start or whether it's a huge game that starts.
I think that was the case for the Oilers last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. They kind of looked overwhelmed. They went down 3-0. We were like, oh, well, that was a quick series. And then they ended up, you know, figuring it out and forcing a game 7. You know, like, I think that's the biggest difference with the Oilers this year and last year is they know what it takes now. I don't think the moment's too big for them, especially for Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. You know, I think they're rising to the occasion, and I don't think the pressure is really affecting them either.
I don't think the pressure is going to affect either team, to be honest.
I mean, when you have two great teams like this, but you know, rematch of the Stanley Cup Final, you know, very experienced teams when it comes to playoffs. Yeah, it's going to be hard for them to feel that kind of pressure.
And I know bounces play a huge factor in hockey from time to time too, and like ice tilt, momentum, whatever. Me personally, whoever comes out with the series is just going to end up wanting it more. That's just how this feels. It's going to be, which team has that one player that's going to make more of a difference that wants him more?
I have to say that player is going to be Connor McDavid. I don't think there's any other player on either team that has put more effort into any game than him in these whole playoffs.
You want to know what the difference is compared to last playoffs to this playoffs? You mentioned it in our preview. Leon Draisaitl's healthy. He's showing it right now. He is scoring the puck whenever he wants. And of course, it does help when you have Connor McDavid setting you up on
I can't get over that play,
And then the overtime winner, Corey Perry's beautiful no-look pass to McDavid. McDavid's sauce. Right in Drysdale's wheelhouse, that was also beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, that line's been terrific for the Oilers. Terrific. You know, Corey Perry has the clutch goal to force overtime in game 2. This has been a really fun series. I think when we're all said and done, I think if you look back at this historically in like 20, 30 years, we're going to be thinking like, man, was this one of like the best ever we ever had? Because, I mean, games 1 and 2 were probably one of the best starts to the Stanley Cup Final that I can remember ever seeing.
Me too. And it's been a long time since I could remember a Stanley Cup Finals that has me this way. And like, I'm excited for game 3. Like, of course, I always want to watch Stanley Cup Finals hockey, but it's just a different feeling of what are we going to get in game 3? Are we going to get the same stuff that we've gotten in 1 and 2? Or is this going to be more of a traditional what we've seen from these teams before?
I think it's going to be even more. I think as we get deeper into the series, it's going to be more intense, more physical, less space. I'd like to think the scoring will go down with the way these two teams have been playing. I could see it being another like 4-3, 5-4 kind of game out of these two teams. You know, honestly, which goalie is going to step up? That could be the bigger difference maker is, you know, Bobrovsky got to get, you know, he hasn't been playing bad, you know, and overtime losses, you're going to get a lot of shots, but you know, it's very uncharacteristic for the Panthers to give up those late goals though.
I do think that these 2 days off for us is huge for both Skinner and Bobrovsky, especially after like playing mental three reset, overtimes. Yeah. The mental reset, the physical reset. Mm-hmm. Just get your mind right. Being a goalie is mentally just as hard as physically, even though you're getting 45 shots in a double overtime period against
you. Still feel like it's your assault if you lose.
Exactly. Like that Stuart Skinner, it's like, man, I should have had that. But at the same time, it's like
your team shouldn't have given a breakaway in double overtime.
Exactly. So, overall, I'm excited to see what Game 3 has in store for us, and hopefully that it's another absolute barn burner.
Come on, Oilers, pull this out. I believe in you.
Quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's into fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, W always has me covered. Whether you needed to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, Dubby will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order. We have some news to go ahead around the league. A lot of news the last couple weeks. Starting off with the big news, the Dallas Stars fire head coach Pete DeBoer. This was inevitable, I think.
I mean, honestly, I was a little surprised because they made it sound like at the postseason pressers, and from what I heard, that they were expecting him to stay on and they were going to figure something out with him and Jake Oettinger to kind of patch up that relationship. I don't know if something changed during exit interviews, you know, after those postseason pressers where players go like, yeah, I don't want to play for him anymore, and it was they were hearing a lot of the same, and they're like, we got to move on from him. It's just for the best.
That's kind of what happened, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of players can express their concerns. They were all internal exit interviews. Not yeah. There was, like, nothing made public, whatever.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of players were not happy with how DeBoer handled it. And it took this long because Jim Nill and the ownership, they were really, like, pros, cons. If we fire DeBoer, who are we going to go after? Is this going to help the team? And eventually they felt like it was the best decision. And plus, Jim Nill said that DeBoer's job was safe right after game 5 and after everything happened. So it's like, okay, like DeBoer and Oettinger are going to have to figure this out. But I think when it became more of a half the roster is not happy about this, like we have to get rid
of it. I mean, I kind of get why Nill had the hesitancy to fire him because, you know, when you've made 3 conference final appearances in a row, you're one of the best teams in the league. You know, you kind of look at it, especially this late in the coaching cycle, like, is there really anybody out there that's better than what we have right now? And I don't know if there's an answer to that question right now, because I just look at some of the potential coaches available, and, you know, I don't know if they're going to be better than a Pete DeBoer out there. You know, one guy I look at, you know, Dallas is kind of a good mix of veteran players and younger players. Definitely more on the veteran side, though. Maybe a guy like Peter Laviolette, he got fired from New York. He's a veteran coach. He's kind of similar to DeBoer, though. It can kind of wear on the players. But for a team, like, I'd say their cup window is very much now. Getting a veteran coach like that might make the most sense.
I think there's 3 coaches that realistically you could go out. Gerard Gallant,
yeah,
Laviolette, and Woodcroft. And I think those are 3 coaches where Dallas is going to have their pickings with. And, of course, it's not a situation like these other teams where it's like it's not an attractive job. This is a very attractive job. It is clearly they are still one of the best teams in the Western Conference. They're coming off another Western Conference Finals appearance. And I do think that a coach would be willing to come. And I really wonder about Peter Laviolette, and I wonder if he goes to Dallas. But they also enter the offseason with questions, too, with Jason Robertson possibly being on the trade block to free up some cap space because he's making a little bit above $7 million. And they have 5 UFAs with $4 million in cap space plus an RFA, Maverick Borg. Those RFAs are not problems. They include Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund, too. So they have a lot of work to do, Jim Nill. And overall, I think the firing with Pete DeBoer, it was inevitable. I knew it was coming after the exit interviews. It was just a matter of when, not if. And overall, I think it was the right move for Dallas. Pete DeBoer is not a coach where if you want to get to the finals, you hire him. If you want to make progress, you hire him. And then eventually, you know.
Oh, and Pete DeBoer will get another job. Like, I think probably not this year. Probably at this point, I don't think there's any teams with an open coaching vacancy.
Hey, Buffalo, you can always fire Lindy.
I mean, do we see a potential, you know, team make a move like that where they kind of been stuck in the mud for a few years? They look at their head coach and like, we don't mind you, but Peter DeBoer has had proven success in the league, you know, getting the team ready for the playoffs and taking them to that next level. I don't see it happening right now. I could see that being a midseason thing where he definitely replaces a coach midseason.
Yeah.
But I think right now it's probably for the best for Pete DeBoer to kind of take the summer off, relax, and, you know, learn from the mistakes he's made in Dallas, especially, you know, at the end of the year. I still really, really don't like how he handled the whole situation with Jake Oettinger. You don't throw your goalie under the bus like that, no matter what the situation is. I don't care. You never, never, ever throw your goalie under the bus.
No, you don't. And
you should never really throw any of your players on the bus. Challenge a team, not a player.
You could have defended Jake Oettinger and be like, listen, you know, I pulled him, thought maybe it was the better move. It clearly didn't work out. I tried to wake the team up. It clearly didn't happen. Like,
mm-hmm. And just own it. It's on me.
Yeah.
Clearly, like, I didn't have our guys ready to play. You know, if you want to pin this loss on anybody, pin it on me.
Yeah, instead of saying that, yeah, Jake Oettinger lost 6 of 7.
Then why'd you start him then?
You were not going into game 6 and starting Casey Smith. Are you a fucking idiot? I'm sorry. Pete DeBoer just became somebody that I'm like, you're fucking dick. You are.
Yeah, no, I really, that really rubs me the wrong way. Yeah.
It does. Gary Bettman had a presser about the new CBA and some other stuff. I'm just going to quickly go over what he talked about. New CBA talks are in good shape as the current deal expires September 15th of 2026. He has no plan to address state tax issue that they've and says that they've existed forever. Makes sense. Would not comment on his future, as he said, sorry to disappoint. Also would not comment on the Canadian trials happening, as he said, he wants to respect the process. He also said that there's no chance for a play-in round in the playoffs, as he alluded to having one this season, and I quote, we had one this year. 3 playoff positions were not determined until the last games. The Islanders will host an all-star styled event in 2027, still set for an Olympic send-off in 2026. If teams want to go back to a centralized draft, they will. And he also has no plans to extend overtime. Kind of all things we've talked about and all kind of expected.
Nothing really surprising out of that press conference. You know, with the tax thing, I don't know what the NHL could possibly do to get around that, because I don't think they can. Because especially in the United States, where it's so different from state to state. Mm-hmm. It's not just because the federal tax is a flat rate, you know, no matter where you live in the country. It's just based on your income. Everyone pays the same taxes on that. But income tax, it's so, so different from state to state. I'm sure it's the same way in Canada with, like, the provinces where they all charge different taxes, like, or what city you live in has different local taxes. So I really, really don't see how the NHL could do anything about that.
I think it's stupid, to be honest, this entire discussion about, teams in no state taxes have a bigger advantage. It's been like this since the salary cap was implemented in 2005.
I mean, it's always been like that, no matter, even if when the salary cap didn't exist, because if you have rich owners in low tax states, they're going to be able to spend more money and attract better players. It's just how it is. So you have to build an attractive team. You have to draft well. And, you know, because I think for the most part, if your team's winning, players are going to want to be there.
Yeah, of course, money is a big part of a player signing somewhere. But if a team like, I'm trying to think of a team in a high tax state. I'm blanking.
I mean, the Rangers.
I guess
the Rangers are one of the most attractive teams for a free agent in the league, and they. I think New York City and the Kings are the 2 highest taxed cities/states in the league in the United States. I think the only one that pays more taxes is Toronto.
And also, before the Panthers were good, no player would sign with them.
No.
They were bad.
They were awful. And, you know, winning changes things. You know, like, you look at a guy like Brad Marchand, who asked to be traded there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was traded there for money. He traded there because that was the best place he could win.
And now he looks rejuvenated. He looks like a much better player.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, every once in a while you're going to see a team that has no business signing a huge free agent, you know, overpaying a guy by a few million dollars because there's no tax and the player's getting like $4 million more a season. But most of the time it's the work of smart trades, good drafting, and just putting the right pieces together, and that attracts better players. No matter, I don't care. How you're Winnipeg and Buffalo complaining, because Winnipeg is a perfect example. They have not really a destination city for most free agents, but they're still a playoff contender year after year because they draft and develop well, and they bring in the right guys via trades and free agency. You know, and then Buffalo is a perfect example of the opposite, where, you know, not a super desirable city. They draft okay. And then the guys that do draft well don't want to be there anymore because they can't take the losing anymore. It's never really been about the money.
No, it's never been about the money. It's always been about the culture and the winning and losing aspect of it. guarantee you, if Buffalo started winning, we would not have this conversation about, we don't have palm trees, we have taxes. No, that wouldn't be a fucking issue.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think I understand Kevin Adams' frustration when he was saying that, because I'm sure he's tried getting, you know, free agents to come here that are just not interested at all, because the team sucks. It's not, has nothing to do with money.
I felt like when Kevin Adams said that, he wanted to crash out.
Oh, I think I think that was the culmination of him like hearing complaints from people from years, like, no one wants to be here. He's like, yeah, no one wants to fucking be here.
Like, he understands that. And yeah, the people that do complain about Kevin Adams, if he's the king of almost made it happen, it's like, especially with how many clauses there are nowadays, whether it's the Winnipeg, whether it's the Buffalo, whether it's these other teams, whether it's a team like Chicago, convincing these players to waive their clauses to go to those cities, it's so hard. You have to literally...
Jacob Trouba was a good example, because he was going to go to a bad situation no matter where he was traded to. And I think his final choices were like New York for Buffalo and Anaheim, and he decided he'd rather live in California than Buffalo.
Yeah, and I think Detroit was in there too.
Yeah, and he had a full no-movement clause, and he picked the best situation for him.
Yeah, he was like, at least, even though...
If he wanted Detroit, he would have been paying less taxes than California, but...
But I mean, California is nice. He's like, if I'm losing, I want to lose in a nice city. Although Anaheim had a good end to their season, and he's like, man, fuck Buffalo.
But I can't blame a guy for like having to choose between. It's like, do I want to live in a high? If I'm going to go to a high tax place, do I want to go somewhere with better weather? Yeah, I'll go lose in Anaheim. At least I can go to Disneyland on my days off, right?
Exactly. And you know what? It's a good situation for him and his family too. And
yeah,
sometimes too, like, having players sign in certain cities, it's not just about winning or losing or the culture. It's also what's best for my family too, especially with these 28, 29-year-olds who their family life is just starting up. Maybe they have a 2-year-old kid or whatever.
Well, like, especially because you want to pick an area where you feel your child's going to be safe, has good schools and a lot of things. And, you know, you plan on being there for a long time, because, I mean, that would be kind of shitty to have a kid and have to move every other year but never have any friends.
Yeah, they're just going to have to make new friends every time, and eventually just becomes, like, exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting a little too off track here. I do like what Gary Bettman said about the play-in round. I think the play-in round is stupid in the NBA. I think you get teams that have no business even talking about playoffs, you know, potentially being an 8 seed or 7 seed in the playoffs, where you have in the NBA, you had teams in the Eastern Conference that were 10 games under 500 that were fighting for playoff spots, which is absurd. You know, and I think he was right. You know, a lot of the years in the NHL, you have playoff spots coming down the last couple games of the year. And for all purposes, that's pretty much a play-in game.
And I totally agree with that. Maybe at one point I was for the play-in round, but the more that I think about it, the more that I don't like it. Because in the NBA, you have a team that's 35-43 as a 10th seed or 9th seed being like, yeah, you end 8 games under 500, but guess what? You get to still fight for a playoff spot because we made this thing called We Want More Money.
I mean, the last few years in the NHL, we've had those situations, like in the East and the West this year. We had Calgary and St. Louis, and then Montreal, Columbus. And then 2 years ago, we had Washington and Philadelphia and a few other teams. Then Buffalo and Florida 3 years ago. So we have those tight situations seemingly every year in the NHL playoffs, where it comes down to like the last couple games of the year to figure out who's going to be in.
If we hypothetically had a play-in round, the matchups would be Ottawa against Detroit and Montreal against the Blue Jackets. Detroit had 86 points. Columbus had 89. They just missed out on the playoffs. And then in the Western Conference, we would have Minnesota at 97 against Vancouver, 90 points, and the Blues against the Flames. The Western Conference is not that bad with 90 and 97, 90 being the Canucks, who were 2 spots out of a playoff spot. But, like, at the end of the day, though, like, if we get another year, like the East had last year, where the playoffs team had, like, 87 points or something or whatever it was, and then you have the 10th spot at 82 points, like, that's not good, because they don't deserve to be in the playoffs. If you're not one of the first team 8 in, you should not be in at all.
Yeah, like I said, I think playing is stupid. It's just a way for the league to make more money and embrace mediocrity. You know, I'm sure fans of the teams enjoy getting a chance to make the playoffs. I mean, but theoretically, like, let's say you were a 10 seed and somehow made the playoffs, you were probably getting swept in the first round.
Yeah, you're not hanging. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that happened, I think, this year with the NBA, the Heat with a 10 seed in the play-in round, and they won. And they were the 8 seed, and they got their ass kicked in the first round.
They were absolutely killed.
Yeah.
They were
like, they should be for a team that's 10 games under 500. That has no business being there.
They shouldn't have even been in the playoffs in the first place. No. And I feel bad for whatever team that beat them. Although, I mean, that loss to them. Although, at the end of the day, if you lose to a 10 seed, do you really deserve
to be in the playoffs? If you're a 1 seed and lose to a 10 seed, yeah, you deserved it.
Well, I'm talking about the Heat being a 10 seed winning in the play-in round. And it's like,
I mean, that's different because all those teams sucked. But that's I'm talking about like the Cavs would have lost to the Heat in the first round. I think even if they would have lost a game, that would have been embarrassing.
That would have been so embarrassing. Yeah. A 60-win team losing to a 30-win team.
Yeah.
Moving on to more news, Dan Muse is hired as the Penguins' next head coach. His resume is a very interesting one. He coached 6 seasons, including 4 NCAA tournament appearances and a national championship with Yale in 2013 from 07 to 2013. He was named the head coach of the Chicago Steel and the USHL ahead of the 14-15 season. And then before the 2017-18 NHL season, he was hired as an assistant coach under Pedro Laviolette with the Predators. And then his contract was terminated after the 2020 season as the Predators fired Laviolette midway through that season. He's been the Rangers assistant coach under Laviolette the last couple seasons. And now he is the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. This came out of left field, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know most of the hot names when it comes to coaching. But from just reading his resume, the dude paid his dues. He's been in the league for a long time assistant. He coached at the college level and the junior level. So, I mean, this very much screams to me that Pittsburgh's starting to go in a different direction. You know, signaling guys like the vets like Crosby and Malkin, like, we got to start embracing the younger guys. We got to start moving forward. So it's going to be interesting for Pittsburgh. They're kind of taking a chance at hiring him, first-time head coach. You know, like I said, he's longtime assistant. So we'll see what happens. I really don't have much to say about this.
No, I'm interested to see what happens because, like you said, it screams that they're going to go in a different direction. I think this team is going to really try to get as young as possible. They're going to go out and they're going to try to acquire draft picks.
I think they should trade Erik Karlsson. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Dude, I don't hate that.
Even if you have to retain half. I know retaining $5 million a year is a lot, but you save $5 million, and I don't know what you think. I don't think he really adds to their team anymore.
No,
he's a luxury to have on a great team, not on a mid team.
No, I think it's just time to move on, and I think that Dubas has to have a sit down conversation with Crosby, Malkin, and I'm of the essence of you have to go to those two and add Letang in there as well. He deserves it, of course, and talk to those three and be like, listen, like, this team, we're in desperate need of going in a rebuild. Like, I know you guys still want to win. You still want to compete. There's two options we can do here. Either A, we discuss trades, or B, it's just like you guys just stick it out for the rest of your careers and we can try to compete before you guys are over.
Well, the one guy they're not going to trade is Sidney Crosby unless he specifically asks for a trade. He's never leaving Pittsburgh. I can see them moving on from Malkin and Letang and Karlsson, but I don't see Crosby ever leaving Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think even if they were in last place, I think Crosby's just too loyal of a player to want to leave. He's like, we're having a really good season, the team's in last place, he's like, look, I got one more championship in me. Like, please let me go somewhere where I can win a championship.
Crosby seems like the type of player that's like, you know, even though we're the worst team in the league, I'm going to coach the younger players in practice, on the ice, off the ice.
I mean, he really cares about the Pittsburgh Penguins, mm-hmm. and I could see him, you know, when he's done playing, you know, taking some kind of, you know, role in the organization.
He cares about that city, man.
Yeah, I mean, he saved the city. Like, he saved the hockey team.
Yeah.
I don't think if Mario Lemieux doesn't buy the team and they don't draft Sidney Crosby, I don't know if we have an NHL team in Pittsburgh.
We don't. They are relocated somewhere else.
I mean, they almost did get relocated. They almost got relocated to Hamilton before Mario Lemieux bought him, and then they found out that the owner was going to move him, and they canceled the sale.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, because he lied during the whole processing. You know, he was committed to Pittsburgh. He wanted the team there. And then before the deal got done, he was like talking to people in his inner circle saying, I can't wait to get the team in Hamilton. And then the NHL found out and Bettman like lost his shit. And he's like, yeah, we're not doing this. We're selling to someone that wants to keep the team there.
I like that.
I think he could have moved the team if he had bought them first. But he made the mistake of running his mouth before he owned the team. The sale hadn't gone through yet.
What a fucking idiot.
Yep.
What an idiot.
We could have had the Hamilton Penguins. It could have been a very different world we're living in right now.
Now we would have a team in Hamilton, a team in Buffalo and Toronto.
Yeah. Would have been, I don't think the NHL wants a team in Hamilton, but that's a discussion for another day.
No, we can go on days and days about that. Also, more head coaching news. The Bruins hired Marco Sturm. Mm-hmm. Again, another move that came out of left field. He coached Germany's national team multiple times. He became an assistant coach on the LA Kings in 2018. And then prior to the 22-23 season, he was named the Ontario Reigns head coach. And now he's here as Bruins head coach. Again, another one that screams that the Bruins are not going to be good. Another one that screams they want to get younger, especially if they hire another American Hockey League coach.
Yeah, Boston's a really interesting team to me. You know, I hate saying this, but I feel like this is kind of like a hire that screams like boys club. You know, he's a former Bruin. You know, of course they're going to hire another Bruin, right? Mm-hmm. Come on. That's what Don Sweeney and Cam Neely do, right?
Don Sweeney's extension looks like it's still. Just kidding, guys.
I can't believe they extended him. But, I mean, that's how the organizations run here. Bruin for life, right?
Yeah.
And they want Bruins in there. They're very much committed since they've taken over. Like, they want to build that Bruins identity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that works when you have the grizzled vets who's been there and they're loyal to the Bruins. But younger players, it's harder to distill that in there. So I think that's why they hired a guy like this to kind of instill that Bruins style of hockey into the players.
You know, at this rate, surprised they haven't brought in Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci and be like, you know what, we're going to instill this in the fucking Bruins locker room. I'm being satire, by the way, guys. But
yeah, I mean, but like the Bruins, like I said, like they've always been very, very much committed to having their identity. Like they want to play Bruins hockey, and they've always done a pretty good job, I feel like, for the most part, bringing in guys that play that Bruins kind of hockey.
I do think that this team they're going to have tough times ahead the next couple of seasons.
I agree. I think it was long overdue. They were a team that were kind of floating by for the last few years. They've always found a way to stay competitive, had a couple Stanley Cup final appearances between their championship in 2011. You know, they lost to Pittsburgh and they lost to St. Louis. So they've always done a good job keeping the team afloat. But I think now, you know, Bergeron's gone, Marchand's gone. You know, things are changing.
I think you
got to get younger. You got to embrace the new guys and you got to maybe find a new Bruins kind of hockey.
As we saw the guys from the early 2010s, a guy like you brought up, Krejci, Bergeron, and eventually you lose Marchand in a trade. But even like before that, losing a lot of those guys that came up with so much success throughout the 2010s start to get older, start to leave. It's like now it's all on Sweeney to build mm-hmm. his roster. And we'll see how he handles this retool, because this is first true we have to retool or rebuild this team, and I don't know if I would trust Sweeney. Maybe he goes out and makes the right moves, but I mean, that extension came out of left field. Oh, actually, it didn't come out of left field. Sorry. With the Bruins, you expect that?
I'm curious if you're a Bruins fan, you're listening or watching, you know, let us know what you think about this hire. I'm very interested to see what a Bruins fan would think of this. I'm kind of indifferent on it. I think this is a move for the long term. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting the Boston Bruins to not be a playoff team next year. I think the most interesting thing to me to watch the next few years is what goes on with David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the vets now on those teams, and I think one of them will be the captain next year. I think they both had A's this year.
Yeah.
I would expect one of them to get a C this year. You know, kind of they were around, you know, when they had, you know, the older Bruins like Chara and Krejci and Bergeron and Marchand, even. So they kind of know what Bruins hockey is, and I expect them to have a lot of leadership tasks placed on them to kind of keep that mentality for Bruins hockey going.
Especially as this team wants to aim to get younger, go out and off the ice, on the ice, show these younger guys what Bruins hockey is, and mm-hmm. maybe put in some new juice. Maybe Marco Sturm is a guy where they bring him in, like you said, to instill Bruins hockey into some of these younger players that they're going to go out and acquire. And now you can just start a new era of Bruins hockey, right? Pastrnak is a elite player. Same with McAvoy.
Pasta had over 100 points this year on the team that came in last place in the Eastern Conference.
Yes. You just get some pieces around these guys and they'll be competitive again, especially with how good Pasta, McAvoy, and
Swayman. Did they come in last place in the East? I know they were one of the bottom teams. I
think they Philly. Didn't. Philly did.
Yeah. Philly had a really bad end of the year.
They came in second last place.
Yeah. By,
they actually tied for last place.
Philly won the tiebreaker.
I mean, I guess you were technically right then.
I guess. I know they were fighting for the bottom of the barrel at the end of the year.
I expect Marco Sturm to at least keep their heads above water somewhat. But if I'm
Boston, we'll see. I mean, what are you going to get out of Jeremy Swayman next year? Is he going to kind of return to form? I have a tough time seeing that. I mean, the thing you got to remember too is, you know, the Hampus Lindholm missed a lot of time last year. He's a really big part of their team. But even with him coming back, I still don't see this team as a playoff team unless they have like a crazy offseason where they bring in a lot of guys. I mean, I could see the Bruins being desperate because they're a team that doesn't like to not be good. Boston's a sports town. I don't think their fans like the team's not being good. You know, the Patriots are finally bad, and I don't think they can really handle it.
No, and the Patriots look okay now, I guess.
I mean, I think they're on the right track, but just what I'm saying is that the Boston fans don't really know how to handle how their team's being bad.
No,
they've had so many great. The Celtics won a championship. You know, the Patriots won all those championships. Yeah, I don't know about the. I don't know.
The really Red Sox, they've won championships.
Yeah, I don't know how good they are now. I don't really follow baseball. But Boston's a city very much used to winning.
Yes, they want winning teams. They want winning teams. And overall, the Bruins fans or just Boston fans, they might have to deal with it for a couple years.
Oh, boo-hoo. I feel so bad for you.
Cry me a river. Last but not least, the Colorado Avalanche re-signed Brock Nelson to a 3x$7.5 million contract. Oof, is all I'm going to say. This is...
I don't hate it.
I don't like this. I'm sorry. I don't.
I mean, I thought he was kind of a no-show in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see. I think he'll be better, more settled in, having a full year on the team under the belt. Because sometimes when you make these trades for these guys at the deadline, it's hard to get them acclimated right away. You know, you only have a certain amount of time to really gel with your team and learn the style they want to play. So I think it will be interesting to see how he, you know, plays his first full year in the Avalanche. He'll be much more settled in, have his role more carved out, and I think he'll be better next year.
I think he'll be better. He might end up getting to a 25-30 goal scorer guy again like he has been the last however long. But the one thing that I don't like about this is I know you end up getting a Martin Natchez and a Jack Drury and all these other fucking players and picks from the Hurricanes.
They don't have any picks. That's I think that's another reason why they had re-signed Nelson. They knew what they had in him. They don't have a ton of money to spend. They don't have any draft picks, so keep what you got.
Coyle and Nelson are making more money combined than Mikko Rantanen is to put up less production than Mikko Rantanen does. That's the issue that I have with this.
How did Mikko Rantanen do in the conference final?
Okay, but the Hurricanes, not the Hurricanes, the Avalanche weren't even there.
I get what you're saying, but, you know, two guys. I think Coyle's a good third line center. Play in the second line. I think you're having two good guys might be. I'm not saying they're better than Rantanen together, but, you know, you got to address depth and have guys be able to be like, have more guys be able to be out there in better situations.
I do think that this situation with them signing Nelson doesn't look as bad if they can get Natchez locked up. But he's a UFA after this season.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure they'll talk to him about it. You know, he's been pretty adamant that he wants to get the UFA. Mm-hmm. I mean, things can change. Maybe he was really good for the Avalanche. He is really good. Looked like he had good chemistry almost right off the bat with Nathan MacKinnon. So, you know, maybe it's just something that, you know, it would make sense for him to stay there. I wouldn't mind being locked on a wing with Nathan MacKinnon.
So. No, maybe the Nelson deal, too, is just maybe it becomes better than what I think. Because at 33 years old, getting 3 years by $7.5 million, like, I know you have to address depth. And maybe at the end of the day, this is something by McFarland where it's like, okay, we have to do something here. We cannot just let Nelson walk for nothing. We'll give him 7.5. And I guess the Islanders offered Nelson 7.5 and he declined it. So obviously winning is part of it, playing with Nathan MacKinnon and Makar and the rest of the guys. And they're clearly a better team than Islanders by far.
Yeah.
But I don't know. At 33 years old, is he going to put up another 30-goal season? I don't know.
I think he can. Might. I think he will next year, honestly. I'm willing to make that bet.
I mean, I'd be happy for the Avalanche if they give him $7.5 million, but I'm not liking the moves that McFarland made all to address just mediocre depth. Now they're a very old team, and truthfully, I'm looking back at this, and if they kept Rantanen, I think they'd be in better shape than they are but now.
What would Rantanen have cost?
That's 12.5 or 12, sorry.
I don't know. My thing with the Avalanche is, you know, as long as you have Nathan MacKinnon and Kale McCarr, you're playing to win championships, because that would be a waste of their talent if you're not going all in every year. Honestly, like, one thing that wouldn't shock me is if you talk to Marty Natchez and he's like straight up like, I'm not resigning. You know, I really like playing here. Maybe I'll come back in free agency, like, after I see what's out there. Because, it's, like I said, he seems like a guy that really wants to see what's out there on the market for him. You know, and, you know, I'll give him credit for sticking to his guns. But do you trade him?
If he tries
to, because they don't have a ton of draft picks. They need to recuperate some assets. You know, for a guy that is just going to walk in free agency anyway, it may make your team worse in the short term. But you need to start getting younger players.
If you go to Natchez and he's like, straight up, I'm not going to re-sign with you, at least before July 1st, and he wants to see what's on the open market, ship him off. Get whatever you can back for him.
And maybe he comes back anyway. But, exactly. I don't think he would after that.
That never happens.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting for the Avalanche. They still got some work to do. I still think they can be a playoff team next year, especially now that they have their goaltending figured out. I think they'll be competitive. I don't know if they're a cup contender right now. They have an interesting offseason ahead of them.
Yeah, they don't have a ton of UFAs or really RFAs. I mean, you have Drew N, Kivi Ranta, and Jimmy VC are your only RFA.
I could see them keeping Drew N around. I think he's a good fit for that team, but the other guys will probably let walk.
Yeah, everybody's pretty locked up. We're going to not see a ton of changes with this roster unless, again, it does turn into a situation where Nate just says he's not going to resign or whatever. But then at the end of the day, that's going to be a trade deadline trade or midseason trade. That's not happening this summer, I highly doubt, especially with how he looked with MacKinnon last year.
I mean, one last thing I'll say about the Avalanche is we talked about this, you know, before the playoffs, until teams that have like the most pressure on them going into the playoffs. And I listed the Avalanche as one of my teams because they were all in. Mm-hmm. They don't have a ton of money to spend. They don't have a lot of holes in their roster per se to really improve in free agency. And they don't have any draft picks. So, you know, you went all in. There's a lot of pressure on them to have a deep playoff run. They lose in the first round. And now more pressure is on them even going into next year.
I do think that if it wasn't for Mikko Rantanen, well, not I do think, it is a known fact that if Mikko Rantanen did not go off, they would have beat the Dallas Stars, and then mm-hmm. they'd be in the second round against the Winnipeg Jets. I do think that part of that is just them just facing a pissed off Mikko Rantanen, and he wanted to...
I don't care. You can't lose to one player.
No.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that buying. I was like, oh well, he was just really good. I was like, I don't give a fuck. you are a team of NHL players. You should be able to stop one guy.
And they weren't able to.
No.
Somehow, no matter how hard MacKinnon tried and McCarr tried, you can tell they were able to take over the series at some point, but it just the rest of the team couldn't stop. Right.
But like I said, as long as they have Kale McCarr and Nathan MacKinnon, they're going to be a competitive team.
Yeah. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, all of our socials are down below, as well as the subscribe button. We'll see you guys in our next episode.